It is Coast to Coast AM. I am Connie Willis, just like the man says. And this hour, we're going to be welcoming Dr. Matthew A. Johnson. We're going to talk to him about, he's been here on Coast once before, or twice before, and he has talked about some encounters that he's had. But we're going to learn about what he's done since then and how he feels about the flesh and blood and the beyond, the nice controversy that's going on all over the place. Hey, don't forget, George Knapp will be back on tomorrow night. He's got some great guests, Greg Bishop and also Bill Chalker. They're going to be talking, you got the UFO enigmas and also Australian cases. So it'll be a good time. That's tomorrow with George Knapp here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. Stick around. More to come. Hey, everybody, it's Coast to Coast AM you're listening to. My name is Connie Willis, and we're going to be talking this hour to Dr. Matthew A. Johnson, clinical psychologist, founder of Team Squatchin' USA, and heads the annual TS USA Bigfoot Interaction Research Conference. That's happening this next weekend in Bremerton, Washington. I am lucky enough to be a part of that, as well as Gimlin, who you just heard, and the man behind it, of course, Dr. J. How are you?
Doing great, Connie. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome back to Coast once again. And I got to tell you, you didn't think it was going to go 3 hours with Bob, did you?
No, I don't think anybody did. We gave him an hour slot in last year's conference. He took 10 minutes. And then so we gave him a half hour during the another hour during the catered dinner, and he only took 30. That's the longest I've ever heard him talk. You did good. He did
a
good.
Record. Yay. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I cannot wait to go to the conference. I'm really looking forward to it. It's amazing what I have learned recently, because I kind of research on my own, do things myself, experience things myself, then talk about them or not talk about them, because, boy, that can get you in a lot of trouble just talking about it to the wrong people. But here we are with your conference, which is very different. Well, by the way, before I say that, you've been on here before with your encounters, but with the conference, yours is very different than all the other ones.
Yes, it is. Our conference is dedicated to the woo, or some would like to say woo-woo.
True.
So we like to focus on the paranormal aspects of the forest people. And you're right, there is a controversy out there. The old school approach, which I used to be for the first 10 years of my 16 years of research, is the belief that they're descendants of Gigantopithecus, which is Latin for giant mountain ape. And I was there, and then I made the switch over to habituation about 6 years ago.
And what is habituation?
Habituation, kind of the Jane Goodall approach, hanging out with them, chilling, okay, and getting used to each other. And that made all the difference in the world.
And how did that change occur for you? Because I know when was that change already happened when you talked to, I guess you had Nori at that time. Were you flesh and blood only at that point when you came?
Well, I was first interviewed on my family's encounter happened July 1st, 2000 on the mountain above the Oregon Caves.
Okay.
10 days later, I was interviewed by Mike Siegel on Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, okay, okay.
And then I believe 2 years later in 2002 by George Norrie, maybe 2003. At that time, I was still flesh and blood because okay, I was a newbie, and I was being, I was under the wing of Matt Moneymaker and being groomed and taught about the Bigfoot species or what the predominant theory was back then. I knew nothing. So, you know, Krantz said it was a descendant of Gigantopithecus. Bindernagel said it. Meldrum said it. Everyone else is saying it. So, therefore, that's what it must be. And I gave, 10 years to it. And anybody that said otherwise, and this was before the advent of Facebook, it's when we were all involved in email listservs, I would take them to town and slice them and dice them and splice them and
oh, no,
crawl back
you didn't
into the
do
hole
that
they came from.
You did not do that.
Huh?
You did not. You were what, a troll, as it's called?
I wasn't a troll.
No.
I was standing up for science.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, a true man of science isn't going to believe this woo-woo stuff. And so, you know, I took him to task. And then after 10 years of doing it the old school route, and I thought, you know what, Peter Burns given it like, what, 40 years, 50 years, and what's it done for him? And you have Renee DeHinden and all these other people that have given it, you know, decades of dedication. And where have they gotten? They haven't even seen one. And I wanted more interaction. And these crazy kooks were talking about interaction. And I thought, you know what? I gave it 10 years, the old school approach. Why not switch over and try it their way? I mean, what do I have to lose? So
when you switched over, yeah, what did you do differently when you switched over?
Leave the high-tech equipment at home. No trail cam, seismic sensors, night vision equipment, all that kind of stuff. No chasing after them. The bottom line is, to describe it, it would be like this. If you invited Cynthia and I over to your house to visit with you, and we show up and you answer the door, and we start taking pictures of you right away, you know, as soon as you open the door, come into your house and hang trail cams on your walls and start yelling and screaming at you and blasting out calls and go right to your master bedroom and pull the covers back and look for hair samples in your bed, you might be a little offended.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And so habituation is we show up on your doorstep and knock and you open it up and we give you some food and come on in and sit down and hang out.
I like that. That's, gift giving and yes, absolutely. So you just decided one day, boom, I'm going to try this and you got immediate response or?
No. First of all, during the first 10 years, you know, we'd whack a tree and occasionally get a whack back. We'd blast out a call and maybe get something back. We could hear them, you know, on the perimeter and they would hit our bait piles because the mentality was they were dumb giant mountain apes, so we're going to bait them in like any other animal. So we got some stuff and we found tracks and scat piles and bedding areas and all that kind of stuff. But when I switched over to the habituation method, the mentality changed that, you know, there was evidence that they were more than just dumb giant mountain apes. They seemed to be intelligent. They seemed to be, you know, the North American Indians seemed to be right that they were forest people. And so started treating them respectfully. Did not get immediate results, but I could tell that they were noticing that I was changing my approach. And this was in the Southern Oregon habituation area. And after a year, they actually started taking the food in the gifting bowls. And keep in mind, in SOA, I had been there for a total of 6 years offering food every night I was there, and they never touched it. But after the year of switching over, they finally started taking the food.
Oh, interesting. What kind of food do you give? I know some people go off the charts with some really crazy stuff, and other people try to keep with nature.
Well, I think you're going to find every family a little different in their taste, but specifically in the Southern Oregon habituation area, we would take two large metal dog food bowls. I would wear surgical gloves, wipe the bowls down. We would put all kinds of food in there, and keep in mind, this is years and years of doing this. So we tried fruit and vegetables and meats, all kinds of meat, cooked and uncooked, and bread products. And it took me a while to figure it out, but eventually we narrowed it down to bread products. They never touched the vegetables or the fruit or the meats. They preferred bread products.
Well, that's interesting. Like what kind of bread products?
Bagels, donuts.
Oh, no.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
That's great.
Cheese bread. Crackers, cookies.
All the things that put the weight on you and the carbs. I got you.
All the things that they can't get in the natural environment. They don't need the meat.
Oh.
They don't need the vegetables and the fruit. They can get that themselves. They
trying something
they
different.
Showed interest in the bread products because they can't get that in their natural environment.
That's something different, absolutely. So what about doing the rocks where you make a different, you know, maybe a puzzle for them and then they come back? And have you experienced anything like that?
Other people have done that. We haven't done that. In the middle of the gifting bowl, on a couple occasions, I took candy corn, and I put 10 pieces of candy corn with the white tips facing the center and made a circle of 10 candy corn. The next morning, came back, found the peanut butter and jelly sandwich halves gone, and the circle of 10 candy corns on one night was left in two straight lines of five. The next night, the circle of candy corn was left in a triangle.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. What do you think that's all about?
I think they communicate with glyphs. And it takes intelligence to do that. A dumb giant mountain ape isn't going to do that, but forest people will. And we also have really incredible audio recordings of spoken language. And that's what really pushed me over the edge was in May of 2012 when I recorded, I was using a parabolic microphone dish in the base camp, which is passive technology, I might add, because, you could anchor it in the base camp. And my son came out of the tent one morning because he had to go to the bathroom and use a portable toilet. And then he came back in the tent and he whispered to me because he knew we were recording and he knew he needed to be quiet. He said, "Dad, I can't lift the water jug for the toilet." So then I said, "Go ahead and go back out. I'll be out right after you." And then I went home, listened to the audio recordings. And when he came out of the tent both times, the adolescent Squatch and Soa said, "Ego Y8," in kind of a North American Indian dialect with staccato syllables, and that just blew my mind.
Yeah, you've got a lot of nice little audio clips. In fact, why don't we play a couple here? Let's see if it's always hard sometimes on the air to do these, so let's I want to pull out one and let's listen to it and then you can describe it afterwards, okay?
Sure.
Okay, let's go ahead and pull out, I think this one's pretty interesting. How about number four, if you can pull out number four, and we'll listen to what we hear, and then afterwards you describe what we've heard. Go ahead.
Okay, what you have there was recorded in December of 2013. Johnny Manson, who heads the Sasquatch Symposium on the west coast of Washington every November, he and I were up there shortly after I spoke at his conference 3 years ago. And it was about 22 degrees up there, I might add. We were sleeping out there in the ice and the frost. But we woke up in the morning and went out and checked the gifting bowls, came back to camp, and we were freezing, 22 degrees. We were just very, very cold. And so we decided to hop inside the Suburban, start up the engine and turn on the heater and warm ourselves up. Well, so we hopped inside the car, and if you go to the SoundCloud.com file for Team Squatching USA, you can hear more of it. But what I did was isolate when we were actually sitting in the car and the car was idling, the adolescent Squatch called my name out three times. Matt, 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 getting a little more desperate every time. And then I looped it three times so they, your listeners could hear it. But that's where that was coming from. We hopped in the Suburban. We turned it on. I think he thought we were leaving, and he was calling my name out. And I have him recorded saying my name, Matt, over a dozen times.
Well, let's hear that again after hearing his story. Let's hear that same sound effect again, or audio clip again, so everybody can hear what you're hearing is Matt, 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 Matt calling out his name. It's kind of kind of creepy when it gets to, sorry to say that, but it's a little creepy when you hear something like that and it's your name. How did that make you feel when you heard it the first time?
To me, it was exhilarating. Like I said, I have them recorded saying my name over a dozen times. I have them recorded saying my dog's name twice, Atlas, Cynthia's name once, and then they said Adam Davies' name once, Adam. So I think it's pretty cool.
And I've heard that from many people along the way, you know, besides people talking about hearing mind speak, they have actually audibly heard out loud where everybody else can hear their name being called. And they're like amazed that they're like, how do they know my name? That's like, you know that they're hearing this correctly when you hear them say, how did they know my name? They're just amazed at that.
Okay, so, well, the reason why they know our names is because I will stand up, and we have a no lights policy in our camp. So no campfires, no lanterns, no flashlights, pitch dark all night long. And I'll stand up in the middle of the camp, and I'll pat my chest and say, my name is Matt. Matt, my name is Matt. What's your name? Can you tell us your name? My name is Matt. And then I'll have my guests stand up and do likewise.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, let's hear another one of your clips here. Let's go to number 8, and we'll listen to that, and then we'll hear what that is.
Okay, that was recorded in June of 2014. That's when Adam Davies, John Carlson, and myself were in camp. And we had gotten, well, they were up all night because of another incident, which we can talk about in a little bit. And we went out and checked the gifting bowls and brought them back to camp. And they had hit the bowls and left fingerprints on the bowls. And we put the bowls on the table, and we also had a box of cinnamon rolls, and we were going to eat those after we took a nap. We went, came back to camp, climbed back into our bags, and fell asleep because we were all tired. And anyway, while we were sleeping, the Squatches came into camp to the table. Parabolic microphone dish was right on the table at the 12 o'clock position, and right next to the box of the cinnamon rolls. And that's pretty much, I guess, Squatch language saying, score, we got the cinnamon rolls. Because when we woke up later and went to the table to get our cinnamon rolls to eat them for breakfast, they were gone.
Oh, wow. Let's hear that one more time again, now that we've heard the story. It's like he's checking things out, and then he finds out, and he's like, whoa, hey, I got the cinnamon bun. That's
There's actually two or three of them talking there with each other.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. So we may be able to hit some more of these audio sounds. We're about to take a break here, and we're going to be talking more with Dr. Matthew A. Johnson, Dr. J., and we're going to ask more about the controversy between flesh and blood and something beyond, a little bit more esoteric. And we're also going to find out about his conference as well, but we're going to see how far he has grown in his Bigfoot world, as if something else, like maybe a portal. So more to come here. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Along with Peter Chris there of KISS on Coast to Coast AM, and Beth, I hear you calling. I'd love to be able to talk to some of the KISS guys and see what their experiences are that are paranormal. I would absolutely love to hear if any of them have anything going on like that. They've got to, you know, they were cool, man. They had it going on. They still do. So I hope maybe we can do that with them one day. But if you're also, you know, Beth, I hear you calling. If no one's calling you and you're single and no one's calling you, and it's because you like to talk about, you know, crop circles or like aliens or, you know, things like that, you know, psychic things and PK. And, well, guess what? George has put something together that's absolutely wonderful, where you can find someone else that likes to talk about the same things you do. Paranormal Date. You can go to paranormaldate.com and check it out. We've got over 42,000 members now. That's a lot of people to choose from. It's free to sign up and peruse it, check it out, see, you know, see what it's all about. And if you want to go a little further and get involved, well, use code George for a nice discount. And if anything happens with anybody where you get really close and maybe marriage or living together or something, we want to know about that. We really do. You can also check out conspiracydate.com for those of you that like to cross the line even more, right? More to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for joining us tonight. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM, our last segment of the evening. It just, time flies, doesn't it? I'll tell you what, clinical psychologist, founder of Team Squatchin' USA, who also heads the annual TSUSA Bigfoot Interaction Research Conference coming up next weekend, is Dr. Matthew A. Johnson. And Dr. J, as you like to be called, clinical psychologist, how do your patients feel about you in the woo-woo world?
Actually, I have had some patients tell me over the years that they have chosen to come in and see me because if I'm going to be honest, like I am to the public, about what's going on with my research, then they know I'm going to be honest with them when they come into my office for therapy.
Absolutely. Good way to think. I always try to tell people when they say something to me about that, you know, how can you believe in this stuff, you know? And I'm searching the truth. It's looking right for the truth. I think we're all a whole lot more honest. I hate to say it that way, but because we are looking for the truth. We are truth seekers.
Correct. Concerning the woo-woo, I'm actually feeling like I'm in good company. Ron Moorhead of the Sierra Sounds, because several of us are speaking out more over the last couple of years, has decided to come out of the closet himself and start talking about the paranormal experiences that they were experiencing back in the 70s when he recorded his vocals. But he was told by a friend of his, Alan Berry, I think, to keep his mouth closed so he wouldn't lose his credibility. Then there's Stacy Brown, winner of Bigfoot Bounty, who's going to be at our conference. He's been experiencing the woo recently and is turned over. So has Michael Merchant, who was one of my worst nemesis in the past. He was going after me like I went after other people until he started experiencing the woo. And then there's Les Stroud, survivor Bigfoot, has experienced the woo.
Yeah,
I believe there's a person out there, Connie Willis, who has experienced the woo. So I feel like I'm in pretty good company.
I have. You're right. Now, I've heard the mind speak, and I've also heard, you know, like they're there without a question, without a doubt, but then they're not. So, but I haven't yet experienced some of the things that you have, and I really look forward to doing that one day. I know that I got the invitation at one point, and also our executive producer Lisa Lyons as well, and I think maybe she and I will go together and keep each other company on that portal thing.
So yeah. Well,
tell me about the portal.
Tell you about the portal. In June of 2014, I had Adam Davies and John Carlson, a friend of his, come to SOA. He had just spent time with Derek Randles at the Olympic Project, came south to SOA with me for four nights, and then went south after that to Northern California. When they were with me in SOA the first two nights, we had major Squatch activity on the perimeter, which was blowing their minds. And then the last two nights, they accidentally triggered a portal at the 6 o'clock position on the perimeter. I had no idea. I had been up there for 8 years, and I had no idea that portal was there. And when it opened up, it was similar to like Stargate. You could look through that portal and see a world with red sky, dark, scraggly vegetation.
And you actually
saw that. Freaking crazy, but there were 2-3 foot tall guardians that came out with glowing red eyes, who were guarding that portal and keeping John and Adam at bay, myself as well. It was an amazing experience. It took me a year to figure out how we accidentally triggered that portal. I conducted an experiment with a group of people that I had with me, and they said, okay, we trust you. So I took them to the Oregon House of Mystery, the Oregon Vortex, in Gold Hill, Oregon, and we took the tour and got some energy juju with us and came back. They had no idea what I was doing. And then we went down to the area of the portal at night in the pitch dark, and we reopened the portal and had done so on three other occasions with a total of 10 people witnessing the portal.
And how did you trigger it?
With there's some kind of residual energy that we brought back with us from the Oregon House of Mystery, the Oregon Vortex, which is a vortex of energy. So that energy acted as a key to unlock the door.
So, again, can you describe that again? So it looked just like what you see. And I've never seen a portal. I want to see a portal. I can't, you know, I will not say they don't exist. Why would I do that? You say they exist. I want to go there and see it myself. I'm looking forward to it one day. But you actually saw...
10 of us saw it over a year's period of time.
And everybody saw the same thing.
Well, actually, the time that opened up in June with John and Adam there and myself, it was a realm or a world with red sky, dark scraggly vegetation, and the 2 3-foot-tall dark guardians with glowing red eyes. Now, the subsequent times a year later in the 4 months we reopened it, it opened up to a realm of light and energy. It was a different realm than it was in June of 2014. There were no guardians, but it was clearly a portal that opened up to light. It's hard to describe it. It kind of is this blue haze and faint white LED light fog that comes out, except the wind was blowing real strong, and this fog wasn't going anywhere because it wasn't a mist. It was light. It was energy. And wind can't blow light. It can blow mist, but not light. The wind was not affecting it. And we all saw it, and it was majorly cool.
That's interesting.
And you could feel the energy as well.
Maybe it's like when you look into some, you know, it's day or nighttime. So maybe there was a different time change, time-wise, what you were seeing. I don't know. But when you describe the guardians, besides the glowing red eyes, were they Bigfoot looking?
No, they weren't Bigfoots. At first, I thought they were juvenile Squatches, but they weren't. They were some kind of different being. And, you know, their main goal was to keep us from going through that portal. And so they kept us back. And I eventually went to bed because I was up driving all day while John and Adam were sleeping in the car while I was taking them around for various tourist activities off the mountain during the day. And when we got back, you know, they were well rested from sleeping, and I was exhausted and I needed to go to bed. Plus, I'd been up there for 8 years and figured that portal was always there, and I always woke up alive every morning, so I didn't need to worry about them. On the other hand, they had never been to SOA. They were already blown away from 2 nights of Squatch activity, let alone throwing a portal on it the last 2 nights, and so they were kind of freaking out, understandably so.
Did you ever try to go in it, and that's how you know they stopped you from going into it?
Guardians? It was approached, and they would kind of rush at us to keep us back and to keep John and Adam back.
I know some people that had heard before through MindSpeak that that there were creatures that looked like Bigfoots in what they believed to be a portal, and what their MindSpeak was that they had said, come and join us. You can come in, but know that you'll never be able to come back. Do you think that's probably the case, and maybe why they may not be letting you in?
Maybe that specific realm was not... you know, a good place for people to go. Don't know what going through the portal would do to the human body. Don't know if that environment would, you know, sustain human life on the other side of the portal. I did see 3 months later, in September of 2014, I saw a Squatch actually walk out of that portal. That's and then off the side of the road into the woods. And then we all heard it walking.
That's interesting. I've heard that one a lot, especially with Skinwalker Ranch as well.
Yep.
We got a conference this weekend.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
tell
next weekend we have a conference Friday, April 22nd through Sunday, April the 24th. And we're going to have some pretty awesome speakers there, and they'll all be sharing about their interaction with the Bigfoot. The people involved have actually found Bigfoot and are interacting with Bigfoot in various ways. And it's going to be very educational, a lot of great people there, opportunity to brush elbows with a lot of awesome speakers and an opportunity to make friends. And we even have the opportunity, if people order by no later than midnight Monday night, they can get catered lunches and dinners thrown in with their tickets.
If you can, just here at the end, can you tell people how they can get a hold of you, and any last things you want to tell to the people out there that are Bigfooters or not Bigfooters?
Sure. You were talking about singles. They could join our Facebook group, Team Squatchin' USA. Just look up Team Squatchin' USA in Facebook, and we have a group of about 7,000. Not quite the 42,000 that George Norrie has, but they can meet people there too. Or they could go straight to my website, teamsquatchinusa.com, and can register online to attend the conference there. As far as what I want to say, I don't think there's a division between flesh and blood and paranormal. I think the forest people are flesh and blood, but I believe they have paranormal abilities. When you look at the example of Jesus Christ, I happen to be a Christian. He was certainly flesh and blood, but he also had paranormal abilities. He could engage in reading through memories. He could engage in healing, and he could cloak and uncloak with the witnesses. After his resurrection, he appeared in the room with the disciples, and the authors of the Gospels went out of their way to say the door was locked, yet he appeared and repeated back to doubting Thomas everything he said. You know, here's my hand, touch it. Here's my side, touch it. So it is possible to be flesh and blood and have paranormal abilities.
That's Dr. Matthew A. Johnson, clinical psychologist, founder of Team Squatchin' USA, and heads the annual TSUSA Bigfoot Interaction Research Conference happening this weekend. Thank you very much, Dr. J, for joining us, and really had a good time. I look forward to seeing you next weekend. Here's something kind of cool that you guys might want to turn up your radio on and jam out a little bit this morning. Tom Yamarone's Bigfoot Ballad Turned Punk. We were talking about that earlier with Gimlin. It's Roswell Kid's hard rockin' version of it, and it's heard in Bobcat's Bigfoot movie, Willow Creek, the Dark Sky production. So let's hear it and wrap up the show with that. We'll be right back here in a minute. Time to jam. That was awesome, wasn't it? Coast to Coast AM is what you're listening to. That was Tom Yamarone's Bigfoot Ballad Turned Punk. Wonderful, wonderful. That was Roswell Kid's. They're a hard rockin' version of it. It's heard in Bobcat's film, the Bigfoot movie, Willow Creek. You saw that? Yeah, and Knapp talked to them before, I believe. So great stuff here. Hey, I want to thank you again to all of our guests, Dr. Matthew A. Johnson and also Bob Gimlin. What a treat tonight was. It was kind to give us their time and thoughts. And thank you for tuning in with me tonight. I appreciate that and hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. If you did enjoy the show, please write in to Coast AM and let us know. From the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky, many thanks going out to Bill May, Kelly Carls, Kirk Wesley, Tim Banal, Lex Lonehood, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Dan Galante, Tommy Danheiser, Sean Latasseur, Nathan Staten, G. Lee, Greg Bishop, Lisa Lyon, George Knapp, and of course, George Norrie. Thank you again as well. Until we meet again, keep watching the night skies and continue with me to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. For Coast to Coast AM, I'm Connie Willis.